This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Spiegel guy.
What's his first name?
You're supposed to know that.
Sorry. Is that offensive?
Do you know his partner?
I don't. I met him at Cubs convention, but I don't know his name.
Afternoons on the Score.
Is that your station?
I don't know.
Last one, we'll go to Chris Emma.
Let's see, is it working now?
Yeah, we got you, Chris.
I promise I'm louder in person. I'm glad we're working this time.
Some people like Chris Emma.
I am one of those people that likes Chris Emma.
Count me among them as well, sir. And Dennis Allen. I'm so glad that's incorporated. The Dennis Allen-Chris Emma connection was a beautiful thing that day.
Yeah, it was a good band. I enjoyed all the work that they did back in the day. Chris Emma is down in Indianapolis. No, he did not go to a Starbucks and get into a fight with any other reporter while he was down there. At least, not yet. Maybe he went to St. Elmo's and got into a fight with someone, because that's where everyone hangs out. He joins us now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. What's up, Emma?
I got my Starbucks confrontation free. Still got a few more days down here, so there's always time to for that interaction.
A brief whiteboard for anybody who hasn't seen it. Ian Rappaport from the NFL Network and Jordan Schultz from Fox apparently had a tête-à-tête at the Starbucks yesterday.
Both guys have broken a lot of stories, and Jordan Schultz was like the first person who really was honed in on Ben Johnson being the Bears coach.
Jordan Schultz is working really hard to try and be in that next batch of NFL newsbreakers.
It's Schefter, and then you start kind of going down the line. And Ian Rappaport is in there. Tom Pelissero is in there for sure. And Jordan Schultz is making a name for himself.
And Jordan Schultz apparently said to words to this effect, according to the Daily Mail, quote, "If you have anything to say it to me, say it to my effing face." And then there was a verbal confrontation. And
the irony, of course, is that Jordan Schultz's father, like, owns Starbucks?
Howard. Former CEO.
Howard. Yeah.
So there's that. And then Ian today joked on Twitter that he's now going to be getting his coffee from Dunkin'.
It should be said, and sorry, Chris, for all this, but we did bring it up. Ian Rappaport called security.
NFL security.
Uh-huh. And Rappaport told a witness that the clash was considered a threat of physical violence.
And so what could happen here is that Jordan could be...
sanctioned?
Well, could have his credentials moved. Like, that's always the thing when you deal with the NFL. This type of stuff happens more often than you would think. And sometimes it's just people getting stuff off their chest. And even if it is, I'm going to whoop your ass. Like, I don't know that it should rise to the level of getting NFL security involved, wow. But I don't know how threatened Ian Rappaport felt. So,
do you mind if I just keep adding this? That I didn't realize that Rappaport is the one who said that Brady and Stafford simply ran into each other at a ski resort after Jordan Schultz had said Brady was hosting Brady had used the word hosting and recruiting of Stafford.
Oh, well, I'm definitely on Team Jordan.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm with Jordan.
That's
on this.
What I'm saying. Let's get him. Let's talk to him.
Guys, I went to that Starbucks today, and I've been there a couple times this week. There was like double the people there today than there have been in the past. And it might have been just a coincidence, but like there was a crowd out there today.
What were they thinking, that Ian and Jordan were going to show back up there and duel it out?
Why not? Yeah, I noticed it. Somebody else was like, there's a lot of people here today. I was like, yep.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
They were probably just hoping that, like, you and Adam Hoge would get into it or something.
I mean, like...
Never with Hoge.
I've had those moments where you and another reporter disagree about something. Maybe you threaten to take it outside, and usually it's squashed. It's usually not a big deal at all.
Wow.
I'll tell you who some of them were off the air.
All right, good.
Emma, all right. Back we have you. Been trying to pay attention to the defensive line for the Bears, and I'm an Abdul Carter guy. I'd love to know if you think the news over the last 24 hours has made it so we might see a drop for him in this draft.
I don't. No, I think he still is that caliber of player who should and will go number one overall. The thing to consider, too, guys, like, this is not a superstar-loaded draft class. Like, there is a drop-off from, like, the top of this class with a guy like Carter down to that next level where you got a bunch of really good, you know, it's called a starter's draft, and I do believe that, but Carter is one of the few true superstar level prospects in this. So I think he's going to stay up at the top. Teams have also known about the injury coming in, obviously. I don't think it's going to set him back too badly. I think once teams get comfortable with the medicals, they'll be able to sign off on taking him high. If it's not one, it'll be top five.
That's too bad. A boy can dream, you know, because we've seen so many weird falls, usually for non-physical issues, be it, you know, Warren Sapp and Randy Moss and others. But so you don't suspect that's going to happen. What do we have today? We had defensive linemen, right? Like, what have been the stories, the main stories coming out of there in terms of defensive linemen at the combine? Because the Bears sure can use some.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're going right now. They started, 3 hours ago with the workouts and go for another 3 or 2 hours, I think it is, at Lucas Oil Stadium. The guy I've been paying attention to is Mason Graham of Michigan. And we've been talking ever since Matt Eberflus was the head coach, now with Ben Johnson and Dennis Allen taking over, about the need for that dominant disruptive three technique. And I'll preface this by saying there's a solid chance Mason Graham is gone by the 10th pick, but I also think he's a guy who could drop to that spot. That'd be a home run pick. Like, you talk about a guy who's got one of the higher floors and first round picks out there, and certainly a high ceiling as well. This guy's leverage ability, like, he's not the most physically dominant player, but he's a smart, savvy player who understands leverage and how to win one-on-ones. He is a menace out there. He is a truly disruptive player who's done it at the high level at Michigan, and he's somebody who translates really well to the NFL game. And when you talk about shoring up the entire defensive line, and the pass rush has been the hot topic. I wrote about it today for 670thescore.com. Like, Mason Graham's a guy who's going to impact the entire defense if he's a Bear. And that's somebody, if he's sitting there at 10, I'd have a hard time passing on him.
Emma, when it comes to whether or not the Bears should prioritize offensive line versus defensive line early, where do you stand on that? And before you answer, I just want to kind of give a little bit of context to it and ask further. Do you think there's a difference maker on the defensive line that's better than a difference maker on the offensive line for the earliest pick?
It's a good question. I mean, yeah, look, Ryan Poles has kind of asked a semblance of this question, and his answer was the convenient way. We can't have enough, especially with the pass rush. I don't know. I don't think you can get in the mindset of we need to wait on this, or maybe this is the guy that we want to take here. Offense, defense, whatever. You know what your needs are. And in this case, it really is true. This draft is set up with the Bears' needs, offensive line, defensive line, pass rush, et cetera, being what's the strength of both free agency and the draft. And it's a really good situation for the Bears. They're going to be able to get a ton of impact, talented players. I believe they're going to be overhauling 4 starters on that offensive line, with Darnell Wright obviously the only piece returning. You got to work aggressively. You got to do everything you can to get those top guys out there. And I tend to think, if I had to say it right now, I think they're going to be signing the interior mostly throughout free agency. I think they're going to be drafting a tackle with the number 10 pick, aggressively looking at pass rushers in free agency and trying to add depth that way, is in addition to in the draft. I mean, you'll probably get a starting tackle, number 10, that's my guess right now, and a pass rusher or D tackle with one of those two second round picks, and you feel really good about that.
Well, interesting stuff. It's going to be fun to put this puzzle together with free agency and then the draft. But we focus on the draft now because the combine's happening, and that's where our guy Chris Emma is. So how would you feel if that tackle they take at 10 is moved inside to play guard for a year? Like, if it's somebody who can play both sides, there's a bunch of different names that have been bandied about in that way, because taking a straight guard is a tough ask at 10. But if you're taking a guy who's going to be a guard with a chance to become your tackle after you let Braxton Jones go, if you don't like that, that kind of colors it a little bit more for me. How would you feel?
Yes, because it's a good question. Look, we've seen Ryan Poles' brass struggle to shore up this offensive line. I don't know if I like the idea of maybe this guy can move here. Like, I want some sure things that you can get in the draft. That I know you're just not getting any sure things, but I want confidence in how these guys are going to pan out. I don't love the idea of doing that. And the funny thing is, yes, that question, I was just looking before we got on here about the idea of Mekhi Becton, who was obviously a first-round tackle, moved over to guard. Jeff Stoutland, one of the best, if not the best, offensive line coach in the NFL, really helped to become one of the premier players out there this past year as part of the Super Bowl champion Eagles. And he hits the open market now as a guy who's going to be a lot more coveted now because Trey Smith is staying in Kansas City. Like, suddenly, for a lot of teams, and probably including the Bears, Mekhi Becton becomes a much stronger, more coveted target. So and that's a fascinating example of a guy who went from tackle to guard and had a lot of success with it. So I'm fascinated to see how it works in free agency. But certainly, there's a lot of really good interior players there. And if and when Darnell Wright is indeed, you know, your starting right tackle, you got that other left tackle spot. I believe they will be looking to upgrade. There's some good guys up there for the 10th pick you can get.
The way he talks about left tackle, like, you got some assurance, huh? You don't think Braxton Jones is gonna keep that job if he comes back healthy?
This is more my belief, and I'm hoping to speak with some people this week where I can get a better sense of that. I think they see much of a need to upgrade all around. He's a good player, and he's just I don't think he's ever going to be that great dominant tackle. I don't think he's going to be that franchise left tackle that you like. And I roll my eyes a little bit. No disrespect to Braxton, but you always hear, oh, he's a fifth round pick. He's a good, like, that doesn't matter. Is he a great starting tackle? Is he one of the best in the league? You can do better. And if you're in that position in the draft, number 10 overall, where somebody's on the board, whether it's whether it's Campbell falling down to that spot or whoever it may be, when you're sitting there, do you say, this is our guy? You don't hesitate. You make that move. You take your starting left tackle, and you believe you've got that guy set for the next 5-10-plus years.
I wonder if this will be one of those spots where there's a split where Ryan Poles is like, no, this is my guy, and I drafted him, and it's fine. And Ben's like, I don't want fine.
Yeah, I'm so with Emma. I'm tired of the caveat whenever we talk about Braxton Jones. It's a true caveat. He is really good for a fifth-round pick, and he's been fairly reliable. He's just – I don't know if there's great in there. I think solid is as good as you can hope for, and that's,
you know,
okay,
what he is. Yeah.
But it's, you can probably do better. Fairly or unfairly, we are going to compare everything that we see over the next few months to what we saw or didn't see over the last 3 years. This rollout for Ben Johnson has been fascinating to watch. You're right there. You've also been right there with Matt Eberflus in that rollout. How would you compare and contrast how the Bears have done this with Ben Johnson and from a personality standpoint, what the two coaches have been?
It's a different energy around this organization now. That's coming off one of the worst, most miserable seasons in Bears history. It all flipped on a dime because you got the most coveted coach out there. It was un-Bears-like in a way to do it, to pay a coach that much money to go get that guy and to say, we mean big business here. We're ready to make a move. And you give them the benefit of the doubt. Nothing's guaranteed, but you certainly have a lot of reason for hope for this guy. He's incredibly smart. Like, that comes across so clearly. He's got a great personality and way about him. He's done tons of these interviews, and it's hard not to really like what he brings. he's going to also set a high standard in that building that's been really, really missing. And that's one thing when I started looking at Ben Johnson and feeling like he was going to be that clear-cut top guy for me, talking with people in Detroit, talking with people inside Hallis Hall who've gotten to know Ben Johnson, everybody said this is exactly what this organization needs. He works with an edge. He's somebody who gets mad if you're not following that standard. There's going to be some moments in training camp where if somebody drops the ball, jumps off sides, whatever it is, he's going to let them hear it. And like that whole field is going to hear it. And he's got coaches around him too. A good mix of like these young, hungry, rising guys, the rising Ben Johnsons, if you will, but also old school, hard-nosed football guys who are going to get on players. And like that's a great mix to have. And it's going to be different now. Like, the standard just wasn't there when they had Eberflus, and clearly that's how you lose 10 games in a row and have a season unravel on you like that. This is a guy who's going to really, from day one, when they get on the practice field and the offseason program, they're going to know it is going to be a lot different now.
You went and heard from Dan Campbell, who talked a lot about this coaching staff on Tuesday. And not just his friend Ben Johnson, but with Dennis Allen, who he worked with. He talked about that, talked about Dan Rauschar, and Campbell, as respected he is. What did you learn about Ben Johnson from the way Dan Campbell talked about him, Chris?
It was cool to hear the way that Dan Campbell mentioned his advice about how much it matters to get the right staff around you, because it was, 2.5 hours before that when we heard from Ben Johnson, and his line was, "I didn't hire my friends." And it goes back to what I was saying about this mix on the staff. Like, the thing, one of the things I really like about Ben Johnson is that he's not a product of the Reed tree or the Belichick. Like, he was the offensive brains behind a revival in Detroit and having one of these top offenses going out there. You know what you're getting with this guy, and he knows what he wants around him now. He's got a ton of unique backgrounds, guys he's not worked with in the past, but knows about, vetted, respects obviously a ton. And that's how you get better as a first-time head coach. A guy like Dennis Allen, who obviously has been a head coach in the league, like that's somebody who's going to help him along the way. But he's got a young guy like Declan Doyle on the other side, who he believes can be that next rising star. Like, I love the way that he's formed the staff. And to take it to another level, guys, like that line, "I didn't hire my friends." No disrespect to Ryan Poles and his brass, but Ryan Poles hired a lot of his friends. Like, there's a lot of people he's comfortable with.
Yes.
Guys he's worked with. Yeah, guys he really has known, but not guys who are going to clearly challenge him. And that's how you have flaws in the scouting process. Like, that's how you have, a Velus Jones type third round pick. Ben Johnson's not going to sign off on a Velus Jones.
Yeah.
Like, Ben Johnson is going to be somebody who will challenge the way that front office operates. You're going to see a different way of approaching the free agency and the draft. And they're going to do it now. To Ryan Poles' credit as well, he's open-minded. This is not a stubborn man at all. He's eager to build this the way that Ben Johnson wants. And obviously on the defensive side, the way Dennis Allen wants. It's a new perspective, and it's going to be really good to challenge and make Ryan Poles better.
Yeah, this is not Trace Armstrong's not going to tell Ben Johnson who to hire, and he did not. And in that cut that we both loved so much, where he says, "Look, I didn't hire a bunch of my friends," he's actually talking about play action. He's talking about the offensive scheme, and he ends up referencing Eric Bieniemy and the Andy Reid tree, Press Taylor coming from the Chip Kelly tree, and Declan, as you mentioned, coming from the Sean Payton tree. And he's like proud to have all these different perspectives there in the mix. It's going to be a very, exactly, very healthy thing.
Speaks, yeah. And the thing about that, too, think about that when he said in that opening press conference, "I'm going to build this offense from the ground up." Like, he's got different influences now. He's got a ton of pieces that are coming into this recipe here as he builds this from the scratch. Like, this is not what we have with Matt Nagy here in Chicago watching him, where we're going to run the Andy Reid offense and I'm going to bring in guys who can really help me with that. Like, he is looking for different perspectives and different styles of offense to make this thing work. That's a commendable and really important way to build this thing.
So this is it. Ian Rappaport posted that Tom Brady and Matthew Stafford, like many other high-profile people, both own houses in the same ski community. So that's what it was all about, man. It was Rappaport seemingly carrying some water for Brady and his agent and Jordan Schultz out there just actually reporting what happened, from my perspective.
I mean, these are the types of things that usually get reporters mad, where, like, if you're Jordan, you're like, "I did really good reporting on this."
Yep, nailed it.
And you feel like someone's trying to undermine it for whatever reason. It might have been Ian got he might have also gotten some really good sources on. They were like, that's overblown. Like, yes, they ran into each other, but guess what? This guy lives here and this guy lives there. They're going to run into each other. But you know how we both feel that this is an unfair advantage.
Yep, yep, yep.
For Tom Brady. Now, I would say to Jordan, be careful.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, understood, because there's a way to play the game and all of that.
Well, not about that. Who does Jordan work for? Who does Tom work for?
Oh, yeah.
Just be careful.
That. Yeah. And also, John Greenberg tweeted that Chris Emma's WBBM reports are not as good as Mike Esposito's WBBM sports
reports.
So they
need to take it on over to Dollop and
yeah, Chris, you and Greenberg need to have it out at a Dollop sometime soon, all right?
I would never with John Greenberg.
Yeah, that's probably good.
I think you should.
I'll do it.
All right,
he's
maybe.
A tiny you little guy, Chris. He might say something smart to you on Twitter. He might just capitalize on people's replies on Twitter and say something there. But you could best him physically.
Wow, so apparently he's on the list.
I think I got him.
He's on the list.
I think I got him.
On the list. Okay. Emma, we didn't mean to draw you into all of this. This is not your business. You do your business very well. Have a good time down in Indy. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, guys.
John Greenberg's been busy doing reporting.
John Greenberg is basically the White Sox beat reporter for The Athletic.
Well, certainly the White Sox ownership beat reporter for The Athletic. Tough day for the White Sox out there in camp, by the way.
Yeah, Andrew Benintendi got hit by a pitch. He's got a broken hand. He's out up to 6 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And Colson Montgomery
was... WCUB over here, huh?
That's right.
You didn't say the good thing that happened to them today.
And Colson Montgomery had back spasms, and he was scratched from the lineup today.
Well,
What'd they get, though?
A dub.
They got that dub.
They got that dub.
Sweet dub. Also, Martin Perez, the new pitcher, said this, quote, "People think we are not contenders."
Correct.
"But we are."
Full stop.
"But we are."
That's the end of the quote.
Yeah, no, that's all we need, Martin.
Oh.
Go on.
What if Martin said that and then just walked away?
"People think we're not contenders." See you later, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
He said, "But we are going to be contenders."
No, you're not.
"We are here for a reason. We don't care what the people say. We just have to focus on our team and go out there and perform. Do what we have to do to win the game at the end of the night."
Should this be the year that we do the follow-up on that? See, because it's a very safe opinion for a player to have. At the beginning of a season, the whole idea of no one believes in us and we're going to show them wrong.
He's right about that.
Should we then, as members of the media, then be allowed to, at the end of the season, be like, "Hey, man, remember when you said that you guys are going to be contenders, but you lost 120 games?"
No.
Should we be able to bring that back to the player?
He's an athlete. Yeah. No, he's an athlete. He has to have the positive mindset.
He'd say, "Hey, it's a team game. See ya."
Hey, Martin, I want to show you this. I want to show you this quote from February when you foolishly said that you were going to be contenders, even though everyone knew that you weren't going to be contenders. How would you speak to that?
Yeah, it's interesting. My favorite reply on Twitter is this one person who says, because all the quote was just said what Martin Perez said, didn't say where he is or anything. And the reply says, "I have absolutely no idea what team Martin is on."
Martin Perez has a decent arm. I'll give him that.
But he's a very solid innings eater, bottom of the rotation guy.
He's a major league pitcher.
But him saying we're here for a reason, yes, the reason you're here is because MLB doesn't do relegation. That's why you're here, Martin, because the MLB has nowhere to put the White Sox.
And you can't just sit out while you're having a rebuild. You have to have a team on the field when you charge $125 for 27 games.
I call this the Ishbia effect.
Yes, we do need to talk a little bit about that. And I think Spiegs and I have come to a conclusion about a White Sox ticket plan that we think we might actually take advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
We'll explain next on The Score.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Spiegel and Holmes show flashback.
Listen, I love the Twins and I love Minnesota because they were where I came up from and always have a great piece to me. But I want the White Sox to be great, man. And if these brothers can come in and buy a larger piece and help up the payroll and pay players and make this team and organization a better thing, then you know what? Let's go, baby. Because Jerry's not going to, as much as this pains me to say, you know, Jerry's not going to own the team forever. And at some point, you know, these guys come in and buy it. And we talked about this today on FT. I think they'd be the second richest owners in baseball behind Stevie Cohen. So, hey, let's go. They can start buying players and buying the superstars we need to win in today's game. Yes. Yes, please. You know what they're going to become? What the Cubs should become. A powerhouse in the Central.
AJ, you got to talk with your guy, AJ?
AJ Przinski the other day with me and Layla.
Oh, that makes me... I love AJ, man. I'm sad I wasn't here for that.
Yeah, we'll get him again. He was really fun. It was cool, and he was giving me crap about being a Cubs guy, and, like, we were talking about the banquet from a few weeks back when we were hanging. And
Mr. Cubs talk. We have it on a shirt.
Yeah. and he was great, man. He was great, and he's, like, very hopeful that Justin Ishbia will be what I have always referred to as the rich hobbyist, what you want the Steve Cohen to be, what Mark Cuban was when the Mavericks got bought, what Steinbrenner was for the Yankees way back in the day, what Ricketts was for the first 5, 6, 7, 8 years of Cubs ownership of, like, all right, let's upgrade this, let's upgrade that, let's do this, and also let's buy ourselves players to augment the farm system at just the right time.
When I got back off vacation, like, this was one of the things that I was interested in talking about a little bit, because it seemed to be like that glimmer of hope for White Sox fans to be like, wait, someone else might jump into this and save it and maybe keep, because Ishbia lives here, is building what, a $47 million house, whatever the hell it is.
I think it's $80 million.
I think it's $87 because it's higher than any free agent contract that they've ever given.
Oh, you're right.
And Benintendi's the highest at $75 million.
Yeah, so 80-some million.
Someone who's, like, legitimately had roots here and laying down more roots here, and they want the White Sox badly enough to give up the pursuit of the Twins ownership to add more of all of the minority ownership stakes that are out there.
He doesn't drop the Twins pursuit if there is not a clear and agreed upon path to full on White Sox ownership.
Maybe he feels like it's the right play, maybe it's a hedge of, like AJ said, that Jerry Reinsdorf is not going to own the team forever, and it doesn't seem like Michael is that interested in running the White Sox. I reached out to a couple of people, and someone that's in the know hit me up because I said, hey, the estate sells the White Sox. Jerry doesn't end up selling it, right? And this person said, yeah, that seems to be the plan, that while it looks like a path to Ishbia being the majority stakeholder,
mm-hmm.
and it might end up being that, the plan has always been that Jerry is going to keep the White Sox as long as he's here.
Right. So Justin Ishbia is only 47. So
it's a great hedge by him.
I think it's interesting. And we'll have plenty of time to talk about it. I think it's more than that.
I think there are ways that he could be an influence on it, even as the chief minority shareholder of the White Sox.
I think those assurances could happen in the form of any number of things, like any number of ways where you could have an agreement that's on the books and signed, but isn't going to be cemented until the estate decides to do what it's going to do.
I also wonder too if there's the opportunity here, like as a minority shareholder, for him to press upon Jerry and say, hey, man, I got some money. Like, I'm going to throw some money into this thing. I want us to throw some money mm-hmm. into this thing. And maybe Jerry is like, oh, well, you know, if you're willing to donate to the cause, maybe that changes strategy for me a little bit instead of me having to come up out of pocket.
Yeah, I think they're going to end up working together on that kind of stuff. You know, that like let's say there's a limited management agreement that's in place, right? And an LMA that's in place for them. They could agree on all sorts of things. And the transfer of sale could happen like at any point during a stadium process, could happen before, during, or after, depending on how that all goes. And to your point, he could guarantee an influx of private money that helps to get a deal done with the state, so the White Sox get that state money, that tax, that hotel tax money that they've been competing for with the Bears. I think Ishbia's presence is almost assuredly going to help the White Sox close that deal where the Bears cannot.
By the
way,
Bears thing been real quiet lately.
Yeah, man.
Doesn't it make you feel like maybe stuff's getting done? Is it possible that...
Got to get shovels in the ground somewhere.
Like in Arlington Heights.
Yeah, man.
Because that's always been the play,
should
right?
Should we go ahead and say it? I know I'm ready to say it. You ready to say it?
Real quick, can I offer one counter to the Ishbia stuff before
absolutely.
You move on to Bears?
Sure.
So as opposed to him just being a rich hobbyist, guys like this are not team owners. They're real estate investors. And if I'm looking at the Twins, I'm looking at a pretty much brand new stadium
right.
and ground built up around the stadium and property already owned, bars, restaurants, whatever. If I'm looking at the White Sox, I'm like, damn, wherever they decide to settle, whether it be rebuilding at 35th and Shields or going to the 78 or Roosevelt Collection, like whatever, wherever they want to go,
absolutely,
I've got blank ground to build every hotel, every restaurant, every bar that I want, and I'm taking all profit. I'm taking all concert revenue, everything. He's doing this for real estate, not for the White Sox.
Well, but the White Sox could be attached to the ability to get this real estate. So I think you're exactly right, Shane, but remember this, the White Sox don't own their stadium now, and they didn't own Comiskey Park either. The old one, they have sold that off. Reinsdorf sold that off in the early 80s, and that was owned by a separate entity, and they paid rent to it.
But
and
they will own the next one.
No, I think
they will.
No, to your point, much like Hickory Street Partners or these kind of things, a separate real estate entity could be set up that is managed by Ishbia and or other people who are owning the White Sox. But the stadium thing could be a separate entity. And I could see that connecting all of these dots together, they get in on the stadium part before they fully get in on the White Sox part.
And the Ishbias are... while they're hobbyists, like, they clearly love sports too. Like, it's not just at least what their public profile has been. Was it Matt? Didn't he play kind of for Michigan State?
No, Justin did.
Justin
for Tom
did.
Izzo.
That's what it was.
Matt kind of played for Tom Izzo. Justin is the baseball lover and the baseball guy at Michigan State.
Right. So it's not like they're just hedge fund guys, or they actually do like sports, and that's why they're part of the ownership of the Phoenix Suns.
Justin loves baseball. Do you see those quotes from Justin about baseball?
Yeah.
It was like baseball is life, essentially. You know? Like,
so that's good. That's what you want.
Yes,
that's the level of enthusiasm from an ownership standpoint that is very attractive to a fan base that mm-hmm. feels like their owner has kind of fallen out of love with baseball. Because in Jerry Reinsdorf's history, we know that he grew up loving baseball. Like, I would never question that. I just think that the business of baseball and the way things are kind of changing, he is like siloed himself away from the game and is now more focused on like the business of it, and that drive to win for some reason doesn't feel like it's in him anymore. Even when the White Sox were chasing good money after bad, I never felt like it was because Jerry didn't want to win. And I know that there have been those quotes out there, things that he has said.
Of course, about that stuff, and his second place in the David Sampson stuff. But let's be honest, he did win it. In 2005, he did.
Yep.
And Paul Konerko gave him the ball there on the podium his pocket.
You think that ends it?
I think we're seeing it all over baseball, that a lot of times ownership groups are like, do I really need to go all out?
Yeah.
Keep going? Get it once I got one? That it becomes a
maybe.
Like your thirst and your starvation and your desperation and your aggressiveness can wane after you get that one.
I think I'm going to buy a pair of the ballpark pass.
$125 for 27 home games. First 3 months, every home game.
If I go to two games, it's paid for itself, right?
100%. And
No! Yeah. You can get tickets day of on StubHub for $7.
No, but Shane, these tickets are probably going to be really good considering, and with the idea that if I wanted to go to more, I could. $250 for a pair of White Sox tickets that are probably going to end up in the 100 level for 27 games.
Are you considered a season ticket holder if you buy this?
I don't think
that's a good
so.
Question.
I know that with the 10 pack you are, because I had I had the weekend mm-hmm. and the 10 pack. And
just
I
want
was,
my bobbleheads.
But with the
season ticket holders, you get the giveaways.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's an excellent question. We know some people over there. Well, let's do some digging. I'll do some digging. You guys can do some digging.
I'll text John Triffin.
I'm hoping that we get him on the show soon.
Okay.
I don't know if he's going to know that part of things.
Yeah, and I don't have his number.
You don't?
I'll give it to you. He doesn't respond to me anyway.
Found a way to just had this nice White Sox
Speaks. Like such a good day.
Like we're having this like meaty, like
solid show.
White Sox segment.
I was going to text somebody. Yeah. I was kidding.
Yeah, just somebody.
You guys responded. I just said one line.
Yeah, just like a random person with no connection to us whatsoever.
That's right. You guys, you know what you guys are? I think you know what you are.
With that, we'll pivot to the negative.
You guys know exactly. You're a bunch
radio
of
losers.
You're a bunch of radio losers.
Tanny. Didn't I say I'm trying to bridge this gap? You guys know that I've literally this week been trying to bridge this gap.
The fixer is here.
I've desperately been trying to bridge this gap.
Lawrence is lying across the crevasse with two hands on the White Sox stadium and 2 feet on the score.
And here you are with bricks, with a backpack of bricks walking across it.
Slowly walking across.
It's a crevasse, by the way.
It
crevasse?
Is.
I believe it's a crevasse.
It's a crevice.
I think it's a crevasse.
Dumas.
It's a crevice.
No, it's dumbass. Is what it is.
That's what it is. Jeez.
Glad we did this.
Crevasse.
It's crevasse.
I'd be happy to be wrong about that, but I don't think I am.
It's crevice.
It's crevice.
A crevette. They're two different things.
I don't think so.
They are?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right,
they both mean a gap.
No, a crevice is like a small little gap, and a crevasse is a deep open crack, especially one in a glacier.
Crack?
Yeah, let's see your deep open crack.
Let's not. Back after this on the score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Joe Buck, do you know that Spiegs is doing ads for a hair treatment that he doesn't need?
The idea of you doing any sort of hair restoration thing makes me gag. Now, good for you. Yeah. It's all in the name of commerce, and I tip my cap. That's hiding my thin hair.
I haven't seen you on...
Afternoons on the Score.
Where are you going?
In the game.
Sit down.
What do you mean? You gotta have five out there.
Sit down. Sit. Coach, need one more. My team's on the floor.
All right. The quality of the film aside overall, or the legacy of the film aside, I happen to love it when I saw it in the theater with my boys, my friends in high school. But Gene Hackman was great in that. Like, he was beaten down by life, but still kind of hopeful and a little bit tortured and understated, because that's what he does or did. And he was great in a lot of things. A true god of acting in American cinema. R.I.P. Gene Hackman at 95.
Wow. I'm reading some of the things that people are saying now about his actual death. And now there is a worry that it was carbon monoxide poisoning.
Yeah, he and his wife both died in separate rooms of the house. And a dog also died
in a
shelter within the house.
I don't see how it can be carbon monoxide, because there were two other dogs that survived. So it's him and his wife and one German Shepherd. And they had two other dogs that survived.
Maybe they were a little, maybe they were healthier dogs. Maybe they were closer to open air. Like, I don't know.
It's pretty grim.
That's really, really sad. But in all of the movies that this guy has had in his life, like Enemy of the State, Will Smith talking about how he couldn't take his eyes off of Gene Hackman in scenes because he was so good. And Will saying that there was never any Hackman thoughts inside of Gene Hackman's head when he was on set, that he was the character.
He just transformed. I mean, like, legendarily, in terms of method acting, like him and Dustin Hoffman and several others said, having studied together and come up together, and they all idolized Hackman. So good.
Robert Duvall as well. The three of them came up together.
Did they?
Yeah.
I mean, like, so many. I mentioned in Transition, The Firm. If you haven't seen The Firm in a while, the Grisham movie with Tom Cruise, Gene Hackman is so good in
that. I love that movie.
I like that movie a lot.
I think that's one of Tom Cruise's, like, best moments as a actor, too. Mm-hmm. That movie, and it was. I saw another clip of Bill Murray talking about how good Gene Hackman is and how he... That Bill Murray, of all people, was saying how there were times on sets where he felt like he had to kind of get in the middle of Gene and directors and Gene actors.
Wow.
Bill Murray.
They did some Wes Anderson movies together.
Yeah, he said that Gene was very rough on Wes Anderson. But it may have made Wes Anderson a better director of it.
And Unforgiven. I haven't watched Unforgiven in a long time.
Royal Tenenbaums, Under Suspicion, Behind Enemy Lines. Like, there's so much.
He's so good in Unforgiven as, like, the likable villain.
Oh!
You know, because he's just so charismatic and so good. Uh-huh. You know? Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah.
French Connection.
Gene Hackman, also a Marine, lied about his age, left home early at 16, and served 4 years in the Marine Corps.
Wow. And he didn't really break it big until late 30s, early 40s. I think he was 40 when French Connection happened.
It's always amazing when you find out, like, who were, like, secret Marines.
Rob Riggle.
Yeah. B. Arthur.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Drew Carey, right? Drew Carey was a Marine.
Yep.
I smell a category.
It's too late. We've already done it.
Where the points don't matter.
It's like Around the Horn. Points don't matter.
Categories, by the way, spelled with an A. Two A's.
So there are so many things that happen off the air that just people aren't going to get.
What a show. What a great show it's been.
What a great show that you've had in your mind.
Yeah. Let's be careful out there.
You've been narrow casting all day. Not broadcasting.
I don't know.
Narrow casting.
Got a couple good ones off. Max Unger was great on the show today.
He was.
Yeah.
We got to bring him back.
That guy's extremely Unger. He's as Unger as anybody is. He's Max Unger. That's what he is. Bruce Levine was great on the show today.
He was great. Shout out to my guy, Bruce.
Yeah.
My guy.
Yeah, your guy. Bruce. And Chris Emma.
We're back, baby.
Chris Emma was good today. Or actually was great. I think he was great.
He's always really good.
He's really good.
I'm a fan of the people here.
But I'm not.
Come on. Felt like you weren't just then.
Yeah, just admit, sometimes you make things a little bit harder for us. When you say things like that.
Lawrence is the one who put Bruce Levine on the grudge list. It made it uncomfortable.
Playfully.
All day.
For real.
It was Thank you for admitting that it's real. Everybody knows it anyway.
It's true. For my partner, Matt Spiegel.
Good night, everybody.
I think we actually made it through it because I was worried. You came in hot in a meeting today, and I'm like, oh, boy, it's going to be one of those shows. But it's not. We had a great show, and no one got in trouble.
Tomorrow, the Cubs play.
Yeah, we'll be on after the Cubs game, and then we'll figure out what it is that we're going to do. But we will have fun until 6 o'clock. For Shane, for Tanny, for Spiegs, I'm Lawrence saying thanks so much for the love and support you show this show. We will try to repay the favor tomorrow after Cubs baseball here on The Score.
It was going so good until the end. Brilliantly done. And then it just devolved into absolute garbage.